So Annie got to see the brand new just born puppies. From that moment on, when I understood language, my world opened up. You can see how exciting it is to teach any child to read. Their world expands. Well, my world expanded greatly. After my education began, the world within my reach was all alive. I spelled to my blocks and to my dogs. In fact, no one could convince me that dogs do not understand. So I would just take their paws and I would spell, "I'm very sorry I tripped over you this morning. I hope that you'll be okay." And sometimes I would go to flowers, and when I would pick a flower, I would spell into the leaf, "Oh, I hope that's all right." And I would spell to everything, because that's what made sense to me, and therefore I thought it much made sense to everyone else as well. In a few more months, I learned how to write, and I wrote my first letter to my cousin named Anna. Now, my progress impressed everyone, even those relatives in my family who wanted to put me away because I was a mental defective. That's what they called me. But my uncle, a good Southern man, never gave that Yankee girl any of the credit, Annie. They just said that I was very smart. In the first summer of my world with language, and after I learned Braille, Annie taught me how to read, and she had brought with her a trunk full of books. Within the first month, I had read all of them, and I just was hungry for more. So she was writing letters to her teacher away at the Perkins School for the Blind, writing about my progress. And so in some ways, the Boston papers began to write about me as well. It was very funny how exaggerated the stories became about me. I was not a genius in any means. I was just a caterpillar who was finally given my wings. Well, the Perkins School director asked me if I would like to come and visit, and I was ecstatic to get to meet other students like me, my age. Some were blind, some were deaf, a few were blind and deaf. That was so exciting. So we got in the train another time. My mother and Annie and I went to visit the Perkins School. During the exciting trip, Annie sat next to me and she would tap out in my hand all the things that we were seeing. She would talk about the flocks of sheep and the cotton fields, the farmers in the fields. They all fascinated me, and I could just imagine what they all looked like. On our way, we stopped again in Washington, D.C. to see my now friend, who was Alexander Graham Bell. Bell had become my good friend, and he had heard stories about me, but when he saw me and was in the room with me for about an hour, he said this quote. He said that my achievement is without parallel in all the education of the deaf. And that was put in the paper. President Grover Cleveland read about me and said, "I want to meet this young woman." So we went to Mr. Cleveland's house. It's a very large white house. And he was very glad to meet me. And I was glad to meet him too. But I have to tell you, not nearly as excited as I was about getting to go to the Perkins School for the Blind. When I arrived in Boston, I got off the train and there was a young woman exactly my age. She stood my height, and I felt her face, and I felt her arms, and I got to her hands, and she talked to me. She talked to me. Someone just like me. It was like being from another planet, and all of a sudden I had landed in my own country. I was taken to what for me was like the candy store. It was a library. It was a room bigger than this room, wall to wall, almost floor to ceiling with books in Braille that I could read. Many times Annie had to pull me out late at night and say, "It's time for bed, Helen." But it was so exciting because my world had been just opened up. The portholes of my life had been opened up. But best of all was the joy of talking to other children with our hands. We would go to bed early, but we would never go to sleep very early. The Perkins Library contained the largest collection of books for the blind in the United States. And some of the writings about me made me almost seem supernatural. They were funny. The director of the Perkins School, after he'd met me for the first time, called me the eighth wonder of the world. And even Queen Victoria of England was familiar with me by a writing she saw in a magazine by Alexander Graham Bell. So by the time I was just 12 years old, I was almost a household word in many homes. I've spoken about my childhood in great detail, but I'd like to tell you a little bit more about my adulthood with broader brushstrokes. It came time for me to think about college. I had a lot to consider because I'd never really been to school. Here's a picture of Annie and me in my favorite classroom that was up in an apple tree. And we would go anywhere we wanted to go to class, and she would sit up there and tell me all about the apples and about the fields. But most of the world that I knew was filtered through my hand and through Annie. So I heard about one school. It was the hardest school for a woman to get into, and the name of the school was Radcliffe. Because it was the hardest school, it became the school that I wanted to go to. So I entered the Cambridge School at age 16 to prepare for my entrance exams to Radcliffe. The exam to enter Radcliffe was rather intense. It contained queries that might baffle many scholars. Let me give you just one question from the English portion of the exam. This is what the question said. Write a paragraph on Silas Marner, on the coming of Epi. Of course, you had to know who all these characters were from what books. On the death of Gabriel. Tell the story of the Merchant of Venice, showing many and what stories are interwoven into it. Mm. How would you have done on that question? Mm-hmm. Well, after sitting in a room with many hours at my Braille typewriter, and then it was translated, they admitted me reluctantly because they did not want to have a young woman with so many handicaps in the year 1900. When I was there at Radcliffe, there was not one bit of special consideration for me for the years I was there. This is what class meant. I would go to class, I would sit next to Annie. Annie would spell out for me as many things as she could. Now remember, it wasn't like deaf language that you know today. We didn't have a lot of symbols for words because I couldn't see them, like when signing. So she had to spell out many things, but we had our own code. So I would listen with every single bit of my body concentrating on what she was saying. And then I would go back to my room as fast as I could, sit at my Braille typewriter, and try to remember what it was Annie had told me during that session. That was how every hour of class was. I finished in 4 years, which isn't that bad. I'm told that sometimes students who have sight and hearing finish in longer than 4 years today, which is hard for me to understand, but for me, it just took 4 years, and I did quite well. When I was at college, I was approached by one of my professors to write a story of my life, which I didn't understand why they would want, but Annie said, it would help people. And I thought if it would help people, then I would do it. So I began writing the story of my life. I did it in little installments. Later it became a book, and maybe you've seen it. The book is titled The Story of My Life, and it is read today in 50 languages. I did learn excellent grades. I earned excellent grades when I was at Radcliffe, but it was very expensive, and my parents did not have the money to send me to school. So in the end, it was Mark Twain and Alexander Graham Bell who had paid for most of my schooling. Now in the beginning, Radcliffe was very reluctant to have me. But in the end, and now, I don't think they regret it very much. I am blessed by the fact that I got to meet some of the finest people alive in the world. I want to tell you some of their names, but I want to tell you a note before I do. Most of the names you will hear are men's names because in my day, the people who had power and influence were mostly male. I hear that that's changing, and I'm very glad for that. Here are some of the people that I had the privilege of knowing. Mark Twain, Andrew Carnegie, Carl Sandburg, the Rockefellers, Henry Ford, many famous actors and actresses like Charlie Chaplin, and there's a picture of me here with him, Albert Einstein was a friend. George Bernard Shaw, Winston Churchill, Eleanor Roosevelt was a particular good friend. I hear you get to meet her in the morning. And many of the presidents of the United States. I was invited to the White House during each term of a presidency from the time I was, from the time of Mr. Cleveland on, and it was an honor to be invited each time. Without the help and the encouragement of these influential and powerful people, I could never have done the work that I did and raised the money that I did for the blind and the deaf. I am greatly indebted to these fine people. But none of these people, these famous, wealthy people, touched my life like one. That was my teacher. And if there are any teachers in this room tonight, I want to thank you, because teachers, my teacher is the one that had the greatest influence in my life. Can you imagine the energy it would have taken Annie to sit by me day in and day out and explain the world to me? I wanted to know more. I had questions about everything. She was sick herself, and she had to receive many operations on her own eyes. Unquestionably, the most painful episodes of my life were times when Annie was ill. My beloved Annie died when she was 70 years old, which is in 1936. Her last words were these. She said, "I wanted to be loved. I was lonesome, and then Helen came into my life. I wanted her to love me, and I loved her. Thank God I gave up my life that Helen might live. God, help her to live without me when I go. It is hard for me to understand how two people could love each other more and help one another more in life as much as Annie and me. The light, the music, the glory of life was withdrawn when she died. I didn't want to go on, but I did. After a few weeks, I came out of my room and I began talking to people. And there was a woman named Polly Thompson. She was our secretary. She'd helped us over the years, and she became my traveling companion, the person that spoke to me and did my interpretation. She helped me write, and she helped me speak, and mostly she helped me do the fundraising for the blind and the deaf. Let me tell you something that was a great disappointment for me in my life. I tried so hard at everything I did, and despite enormous effort with the help of others, I never learned to speak clearly. Thomas Edison once said that my voice reminded him of steam exploding. And the only people that could really understand me were the children. They were the ones that could make sense of it. Now, although I did not speak well, that never stopped me. I had many speaking tours all over the world. The most successful ones were ones where Annie would come with me and I would speak for a few minutes until people got very frustrated. Then I would sit down and Annie would stand up and she would speak. As always, Annie and I were an unbeatable team. A little bit about my faith. Annie said she had no religion at all, but in the end she talked a lot about God, and I think that maybe God used me to help Annie with her faith. But my faith in God was absolutely at the core of my being. It was no problem for me to believe and have faith. When I was 16 years old, I was introduced to Swedenborg, who is a Swedish mystic. And he taught something that I believe you probably all believe. He taught that the essence of God is love, wisdom, and strength. That God's essence is wisdom, love, and strength. Now, the spiritual world offered no difficulty for one who is deaf and blind. Nearly everything in the natural world is as vague and remote from my senses as faith is for you. So, As spiritual things seem to the minds of most people, the spiritual world made complete sense to me. I had no trouble believing in faith as very much as I believed in this cup. God was that real to me. It would be as difficult for me to understand life without faith as it would the body without a beating heart. My faith in God emboldened me, empowered me, and enabled me to live my life the way I did. Over my lifetime, I lived a very happy and abundant life. People said that there was a sparkle and a joy in my eyes that they rarely saw in people who had sight and hearing. Afterwards, come look at some of these pictures of me. Even in my 90s, here I am with a bunch of women who are dancing, and the look on my face, there was a sparkle. I loved life. I loved people. I loved meeting people. And when I met important people, they would let me touch their face. And that was like really getting to meet them. There's an opera singer and some presidents and Eleanor Roosevelt of me getting to touch their face. I continued to be mentally alert well into my 80s. I read my favorite books each day. My favorite books were the Bible and poetry and philosophy. I always had at least one dog, which was a love I began in my dark childhood when people did not understand me. Every day I strolled in my garden, and I would stroke the flowers that Annie had taught me to do some 80 years earlier in Tuscumbia. I died quietly on June 1st in 1968 at age 88, and my ashes were placed alongside Annie Sullivan's. In my life, I had learned to swim. I had learned to ride a bicycle. I had learned how to ride a horse. I've written several books. I've met world leaders and lovely common folk like many of you. Once, I flew in the open cockpit of an airplane, and I said that life is either a daring adventure or it is nothing at all. I said, life is either a daring adventure or it is nothing at all. Thank you for letting me tell you my story this evening. I hope that your hearing my story will allow you to live your life and to do what God calls you to do in your life more easily. When you get discouraged sometimes, remember a bit about me and my life. Hope it will enable you and embolden you as well. Thank you. I'll stay Helen, and I'd be glad to take questions if you have any questions of Helen's life. Yes?
Wasn't there a boyfriend in her life? And
yes, there was.
Father chased him away.
That's exactly right. I had a boyfriend, and we were engaged to be married, and my parents found out about it because their friends called them from Boston, and in the paper it had gave my name as registering to get a marriage license. That's how my parents found out. Not very wise for your parents to find out that way. So I took him home to Alabama to meet my parents. My parents were very protective of me, you can probably understand. And they wondered if he was perhaps going to take advantage of me and my fame for himself and the wealth it might bring him. And so my parents were so adamant about it, I said goodbye to him and he left my parents' home. I never saw him again. Because my parents had put up with so much with me, I probably did too much to please them. And I think in the end, that was a mistake. That was a way I could have broken away. There's a lot of psychology today that would tell you that I was pleasing them, very codependent, more than I was myself. But there was a young man in my life, but that ended quickly. Any other, yes?
How did you learn to enunciate and establish volume to project your voice?
I didn't. I would stand up at a microphone, and sometimes there's people in my, when I do this, who actually met me. Did anyone in this group ever see me? You did.
Yes, Dr. Keller, I saw you receive your honorary doctorate from Harvard University.
Did you really?
And heard you give an address that afternoon.
Please tell. Please tell.
I'm afraid I cannot remember what you said. But I do remember that we could hear you clearly.
Really? You did hear me. You know, I'm just getting goose pimples because I've met people before who have met me in an airport brushing, but to be there when I got my honorary doctorate from Harvard is It's very exciting. Thank you for calling me Dr. Keller. I didn't make that a big deal, but that's very... Do you remember the year?
It must have been 1956 or 57.
And you were how old?
Okay. And I remember that another one who received the honorary doctorate that year was Konrad Adenauer.
Well, thank you so much. I'm sure glad I asked that question. Very glad. Any more questions? Yes?
What did it sound like when you talk?
Well, steam exploded. Have you ever heard a deaf person speak?
No, I've never even seen or heard a deaf person.
Well, it would be...
Yeah, I saw them across the parking lot.
It would be a good education. Since a deaf person has not heard someone form a word, they don't know how to do it themselves. So it sounds... it's hard to explain.
Someone has mud in their mouth?
Well, okay. A little bit like that, and it's not well defined. It's like someone talked with their mouth open or with mush in it or something. And, you know, Helen, was there anyone that ever tried as hard as anyone? I mean, Helen tried. My father says about me in real life that I do everything like I'm killing snakes. Well, that's the way Helen Keller went after her life, like she was killing snakes. And, you know, if Helen Keller wanted to do it, by golly, it would get done. And I can imagine how she tried to speak, but it never happened. She had to resort to writing and to people speaking for her. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
Did she ever learn to play a musical instrument?
You know, I loved music, and I would feel the vibrations. And this is a wonderful picture of how I loved music. And I would sometimes lay on the floor and I would feel the vibrations, or I would hold the radio. Of course, you know, we didn't have TV or anything. But sometimes I would get to go to symphonies, and people said, oh, it would be wasted on Helen. But it was not wasted. I would get caught up in the vibrations. You know, my sense of touch was much better than yours. My sense of smell, I could tell variety of roses from the kind of smell that was so distinguished my sense of smell was. So I felt music. I never heard it, but I felt music.
Did Dr. Keller speak words?
Yes.
So that they could be understood.
Yes.
At that doctorate. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Was it a large room?
It was outside. Harvard Yard. With
yes.
The course.
Yes.
Strong amplification.
I can't tell you how thrilled I am to get to meet you and to meet someone that knew her. Sometimes I'm given an article from the 40s from the Ladies' Home Journal when her story about my life came out, and I have a couple. I've seen them. I don't own them, but when it came out, the Ladies' Home Journal was where her story came out, and then it was put into book form. So yes,
you've seen the play Helen Keller. I can't remember what's called.
The Miracle Worker.
Yeah, the Miracle Worker. But I remember the scene where this teacher would put her hand to the throat and she would feel
right.
The vibration
right.
Coming to talk that way.
Yeah.
It was just such a wonderful experience of learning for everybody, I think.
Yes. One of the things I love about going to schools and telling this story is it's so encouraging to the teachers, because, you know, the Miracle Worker was Annie Sullivan. Mm-hmm. Not Helen Keller. The Miracle Worker was Annie Sullivan. And the, you know, the difference that each of us know that a teacher has made in our life. And, you know, had Annie not believed in Helen, believed she could go to Radcliffe. You know, she's the most famous graduate Radcliffe will ever have. And they just begrudgingly let her in. So, you know, I mean, it kind of tells you to stay the course. What a great story for kids to hear who are down about whatever in their life. How can you when you hear the story of Helen Keller or Eleanor Roosevelt or Sojourner Truth, what they, the obstacles they overcame, you can live your life with a bit more ease. Yes?
Have you ever told the story to a group of kids who are hearing or visually impaired?
I have not. And I've even been told by some good friends who work with students that Helen Keller is somewhat resented in deaf communities because she did so much. It is like, so what's your problem? Why can't you be beyond extraordinary like Helen Keller? And so there's some real anger and bitterness towards Helen Keller, which I understand. Mm-hmm. I mean, just to live life is quite a struggle for many folks with those handicaps.
There's a question up
there. Oh, thank you, yes.
What year were you born?
What year was I born? In 1827, let me make sure. I'm 1880, I'm sorry, 1880. Sorry, my women are all kind of you. Well, thank you very much. What a pleasure to have you. And if you want to come hear about Eleanor Roosevelt tomorrow, please look at the pictures. Cards are here, and see you at Vespers.